Hi, and welcome to this, the 456th episode of the IVMV podcast. Cubs players keep piling up awards for the 2016 season, including the National League MVP. On this episode, we'll talk about the awards and the Cubs that did and did not win those awards. The Cubs have made some roster moves lately, and we'll look at those. The Arizona Fall League season is done, and we will check on the prospects with the Mesa Solar Sox this year. And we'll look at areas of the team and positions that the Cubs might address this offseason and share some of our thoughts on the options that the Cubs may have. And because the conversation is out there, we'll talk a little bit about the Bartman story. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hello, it's Andy.
Kurt.
Kurt, why don't you say that again?
And Kurt.
It just cut out, so it said Ert. I was going to edit it out. I was going to edit it, but now I'm just going to leave it in there.
Just roll with it.
So Cubs convention coming up, and boy, I don't know. I know one person that got tickets, Casey. I checked with him because I met him up there. He's been listening to the podcast for a long time, and he got tickets because he bought them when, you know, they were part of like a package to get hotel rooms up there. So he already had his, but I don't know anyone else that got tickets to Cubs convention. I tried in the MasterCard thing. Didn't happen. And then I was there. I got in at like maybe 12:04 and it was sold out. So yeah, ridiculous. But you know, I guess that's what you would expect this year. It was a little frustrating though. I mean, I know there's no way for Cubs to like, for the Cubs to, you know, give preferential treatment to people that have attended a long time. I wouldn't necessarily say that I think it's a lot of scalpers and stuff that bought the tickets, because you can only buy four at a time. So I don't really know. I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of people there, and I'm just surprised that everything went that quickly. I guess season ticket holders probably got first crack at it. So, but yeah, we didn't get any tickets. I still may find a way in, but so what we're kind of thinking about, we're kicking around the idea, is kind of doing like, you know, our own little thing up there. I think a lot of Cubs fans have enjoyed going up there. I say up there because it's north for us, but going up there for, you know, to freeze your ass off in January in Chicago. But you know what? Here's the nice thing. So we're kind of like thinking about doing our own little thing. And here's the beautiful thing. There won't be like 20,000 people at our thing. It won't be, if you have any sort of social anxiety, it shouldn't be a problem. I think everything's going to be okay. And we haven't figured out what we're doing yet. I kind of been talking with Danny Rocket and see if we can't put something together. But I think a lot of people were looking forward to going this year, people that typically don't go. And now it's, you know, it's kind of a bummer. And January is like, that's a dead, you know, it's right in between the season ending and spring training starting. And it's just kind of like, that's one nice thing about Cubs convention. It's a great place to kind of like get back into the flow of things and kind of like start looking ahead to the 2017 season. There were a lot of things I really enjoyed about it, but I think, you know, Cubs convention is going to be a lot different here over the next handful of years. And I would imagine they've got to be looking at trying to find a bigger, you know, a venue for it and everything. But, yeah, crazy. Did you guys even try to buy tickets or?
I didn't even try.
Yeah.
After I heard you and Danny kind of talking about how tough it was going to be, I just didn't even try.
Yeah.
And I'd never been, and you know how we've covered it, but it doesn't sound like the most pleasurable experience for me. So I didn't even attempt. If I sort of landed on one, I might go, but
yeah. I was kind of interested in going just because, you know, there are some aspects of Cubs convention I really like. There's some I don't like, you know, but that's with like everything in life. There's aspects of it that you don't like. So, or that you don't like, I mean, but I was really, I'm curious what this year is going to be like. Like, I think it will just be bedlam.
Well, this has to be a forecast of what, opening ticket sale day is going to be like.
Right. Oh yeah.
Just like it was, you know, what was that? 2009, probably 2008, 2009. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yep, yep. And I would say not just opening day tickets, but tickets throughout, you know, the entire season. It's going to be tough. And but that's a good thing for the Cubs. It's a good thing for you know, just I guess the business side of things. And okay.
What do you think the chances are that Crazy Hat Lady gets in?
That's a good question. That's what I wonder if it'll be like a completely different crowd or yeah, I don't know. I mean, on one hand, I'll kind of miss the, you know, the fan question thing where they, you know, well, I've been a Cubs fan since 1962. And, you know, I think what you need to do is you need to go out and get a lefty.
And then, like, finally, after 5 minutes of blathering, what was your question, ma'am? Was there a question in there? Or was it just a big, long narrative of your, you know, Cubs fandom?
Right, right. Hey, for some people, you know what? Guys, we get to be behind microphones once a week right now. We get to say what we want. This is their one chance. They should just all start podcasts.
That's true.
I just call it the Crazy Hat Lady Podcast.
I would listen.
Right, I would.
Right. Sure.
I wonder if she's found some positivity, though. You know, I wonder if there's a lot of negativity in the fan questions sometimes.
Yeah, there
is. Convention, so I'm sure it's always still there.
Yeah. But yeah, obviously when you win World Series and your team is good and you know, this is the kind of stuff that happens. But another thing that happens when your team is good and players get a lot of attention is they win awards.
Yeah, they do. They won a lot of them. And then of course people are going to argue about the ones they didn't win. Let's start with the biggest and most important one. And that's the BSMP, which I'm assuming most people know what that stands for, but if you don't, it's the best social media personality. And that award went to Mr. Anthony Rizzo. So, you know, slow clap for Anthony on that.
Right, yeah.
I was thinking it was like a terrible military policeman, but...
It's okay. Also that. But in this case, yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, what a huge honor for him.
Right. After winning, what, the Platinum Glove or whatever? Yeah. But, you know, I would argue that, well, I would argue he kind of didn't deserve either one of those, but that's just me. I don't know. Like, aren't there, like, I don't follow a lot of players on Twitter. It's just not really my thing. You know, like, I think a lot of players don't show a lot of personality, and I think some do. But, like, I don't really think that Anthony Rizzo, doesn't it seem like there are players out there that had more entertaining Twitter.
He must have got some credit for the Grandpa Rossi thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Took that over, and that was fun. And even
okay, I get that.
Own.
Yeah.
I mean, and then he posts like Instagram posts of him playing piano and stuff like that. He does show personality quite a bit. However, I would argue that maybe he is fourth on the team, some fourth or fifth on the team in best social media personality. I think I would put probably Lester and Miggy ahead of him for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, Mickey's pretty great. And then there's that.
But Jake I don't know Arrieta if Mickey.
I like his political commentary.
Who?
Jake Arrieta. He's a good one too. Yes.
I don't know if I don't know if Mickey understands how hilarious his is.
I don't think so. I don't know. There's got to be some self awareness there.
Yeah, when he self deprecates and talks about batting average and stuff, it's
that's
pretty funny.
True. That's true. There's so many good follows in baseball though. And it seems like I guess maybe I'm basing it off of Twitter and like Anthony Rizzo, from what I can remember, it seems like a lot of his Twitter stuff is just, you know, promoting his charity events and things like that. But okay. I think we spent enough time on
totally
social
lame.
Media.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we were able to spend a little time talking about the big one. But, yeah, the next one that Cubs kind of missed out on was the Cy Young. Of course it went to Scherzer. Lester and Hendricks 2 and 3, and you know there's been a lot of chatter about this one, but you know I'm not going to go into that. This is one where I align with you, Corey. Where once we start the awards, I think are fun, but once we start arguing about them, that's when I'm like, yeah, forget about it. It's just baseball writers checking a box,
right? Yeah, and I just think that like I have a heart. I mean, I think when the Cubs didn't have anything else going for them, you know, like Dawson winning MVP in '87. The Cubs were a last place team, and that was like kind of like a consolation prize. It was like, oh, we have something, you know, there's something there that's fun. But with this, like, I don't know. And I know that a lot of our listeners are probably, you know, really upset with the awards that the Cubs did not win. But I mean, you know, Scherzer was deserving, in my opinion. Like, if I had to choose one of them, I would have given it to Scherzer. And I think that, I don't know. I don't really understand the, I've seen a lot of people like talking about how the Cubs got like, you know, ripped off and stuff like that. I don't really get it because I think anytime with any of these awards, pretty much any of the finalists, they're finalists for a reason, and it's because they're deserving. It's not like there's just one person, you know, that would, it's clearly this person, except for maybe the MVP this year. But, you know, I just, I think, you know, when it comes to the awards that the Cubs lost, I think, you know, I think you can make arguments for any of the finalists, and I don't know, that's just kind of where, and I don't know if it's like because it's something that is not, I don't know if it's the time of the year that it is or what, but I just don't care.
Yeah, I generally don't either, but I do. I also like seeing guys, you know, be recognized.
Sure. Individual, yeah. Achievement,
but
well, I really like the rookie of the year, you know, like, yeah. I think that's a really, you know, that's an award that I would care a lot about. Cause I mean, that's an award that you can only win once in your career. Which makes it really tough because there can be, you know, another rookie that just happens to come in the same year as you do, and you don't get it. So, yeah. Sorry, I'll stop interrupting you. Go ahead.
Well, so the other one they didn't get is Manager of the Year, and that went to Roberts, which I think also very deserving. And then the big one, of course, is the MVP, and Bryant ran away with that one, got 29 out of 30 first place votes. And he's just the fourth player to win Rookie of the Year and MVP in his first two seasons. Others were Ripken, Howard, Cal Ripken, not Billy, Ryan Howard and Dustin Pedroia. So yeah, it's a pretty good company there. And then of course to throw a World Series in there in with those two awards, it's a pretty good start to a career.
Well, and the awards that he won in college, you know, the collegiate mm-hmm. player of the year or whatever, and then the minor league player of the year the next year. So yeah, his trophy case is becoming cluttered.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's not a whole lot to discuss there because I think we all knew it was coming, but I think the more interesting thing just to like remind ourselves of how incredible it is for a guy this young to have expectations that high, to, you know, outperform expectations. And just, I don't know. It's incredible. It's been incredible to watch. And yeah, it's, I don't want to sort of like let that go of how, because he's so quiet and he just kind of does his thing and he's not the most loud voice out there. So.
Well, even
through be great for baseball and great for the team.
Right. And even throughout the season, I mean, we talked all season long about how he was like just flying under the radar. We were spending a lot of time talking about other players, and here, you know, the NL MVP was on the team, and it's just, he's so consistent and he's so, you know, he's just so steady, I guess. And he really does fly under the radar. It's really odd.
Yeah.
So does that mean we don't have to talk about awards anymore until next year at this time?
Well, we'll see if the baseball writers have anything else up their sleeve, but it sounds like that's it.
Somebody's going to come, you know, there's all sorts of awards now. So, you know, somebody will come in like February with a whole slew of awards. But also, the Cubs have made some roster moves. Andy, do you want to get us caught up on those?
Yeah, the Cubs had to add some players to their 40-man roster to protect them from the upcoming Rule 5 draft. And so those players include Dwayne Underwood, who is a right-hand pitcher, and along with Dylan Cease, one of the top pitching prospects in the Cubs system. In fact, I think I've seen Cease ranked ahead of him lately. He used to be the top prospect, but he's had a couple rough seasons and injuries. So, but he's still up there. He's still a highly regarded prospect. And he's been added to the 40-man, along with Jake Leathersich, who's a lefty, Victor Caratini, a catcher, and Jacob Hanneman, an outfielder. So, those guys were all added. I believe, along with David Rollins, who's a lefty that they claimed from the Mets at the end of this past week. I think that brings the 40-man to 39 players since Munenari Kawasaki recently elected free agency. So Cubs just making some moves to make sure that they maintain their hold on these players who are drafted around 2012, 2013, and they're depending on their age at the time of the draft. So,
yeah, and I'm sure you probably didn't look at this, and I wish I would have, but do you happen to know who is not protected in the Rule 5 draft now?
Yeah, I do. That would include Corey Black, Jose Paulino, and I think that's it.
I thought Corey Black was on the 40, man.
He is not.
Okay.
I wouldn't expect him to.
Yeah, I don't think anybody
get through unscathed. Do you?
I mean, I would expect them to. I don't know. You have to remember that teams have to keep the player that they pick in the Rule 5 draft for the entire season
on their 25. Man, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I don't think Corey Black is quite at that level yet.
Yeah. And then one thing I wanted to talk about, I mean, typically at this point on the calendar, the Cubs have been done playing baseball for almost 2 months, and we have spent a lot of time talking about the Arizona Fall League. And this season, we did not talk about the Arizona Fall League once. Actually, we probably did, because that's where Schwarber went for a weekend before he came up for the World Series roster. But, you know, there were more important games to watch and discuss, so we weren't paying too much attention to the Fall League. But the Arizona Fall League is now finished, and if you're not familiar with this league, it's a fun one to pay attention to, because you basically get to see the cream of the crop from across the different levels all competing in one league. And this league, I wouldn't say the ultimate cream of the crop. I mean, there's a lot of like top prospects that don't play in this league, but there's a lot of like really interesting prospects that play. And the league serves as a way to kind of, you know, continue development in the off season. There's a lot of different winter leagues, and I think those start in January, I believe. So the teams in the Arizona Fall League are made up of prospects from certain teams. So the Cubs prospects play with, they play for the Mesa Solar Sox. And also on that team would be prospects from the Indians, Marlins, A's, and Blue Jays. And one quick note, I don't know if you guys saw this, but I had read that when the Cubs sent Schwarber to the Arizona Fall League for a few days right before they added him to the World Series roster, I remembered hearing that there was an Indians coach working with Schwarber to get him ready to play in the World Series against the Indians.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing that on the broadcast during one of the games.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of like, you know, kind of interesting. And one thing I've always kind of found interesting about this is the Cubs are very, you know, I think a lot of organizations are pretty strategic about how they develop their players. And it's kind of funny that they hand them over to other coaches, you know, coaching staffs and managers, for, you know, what is it about a 6 week, season, maybe, I don't know, a month or 6 weeks or something. So I don't know. I just think that's kind of interesting. But the Cubs sent, I believe, 7 players, excluding Schwarber, to the Solar Sox this season. The Solar Sox had 2 pitchers on the team with a 0 ERA, and both of those were Cubs pitchers, James Ferris and Steven Paraxilis. And but this is a short league. Paraxilis had 6 1/3 innings pitched, and Ferris had 10. So we're not obviously not dealing with huge samples. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the individual stats. Eloy Jimenez, Ian Happ, and Victor Caratini were the position players from the Cubs roster. I think those were the 3. Anyway, they didn't do anything eye catching, except for in the championship game, which the Solar Sox won. Ian Happ went 4 for 4 with 2 home runs. So that was pretty cool to see. And it will be interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Happ does in 2017. He spent the second half of the 2016 season in Double-A Tennessee. He may start there in 2016 and then go to Iowa or just spend the entire season in Iowa. He plays second base, which, you know, the Cubs have two quality second basemen right now. There's no urgency. He has played all three outfield spots in the minors, so he's got some versatility, but there's really no rush. But he is another advanced college bat. You know, I'm not going to draw comparisons necessarily with Bryant and Schwarber, but he is advanced in, as far as his development goes. And he was drafted in 2015. And so here, after one full season, we're looking at him going to AAA, which is, you know, kind of that same track that the other advanced college bats were, that they took. So one more thing worth mentioning about the Arizona Fall League. Hey, guys, do you remember this Gleyber Torres guy? Do you remember him?
Claybar? Yeah, I think I've heard of him.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Cubs traded him for Chapman, gave up a big piece of the farm system in Torres for a shot at a World Series championship, or at least a better shot by adding Chapman. And, well, I think he could make the argument that it paid off for the Cubs. They won the World Series, and now it's paying off for the Yankees. Gleyber Torres was named the youngest MVP in Arizona Fall League history. Okay, get ready for these stats, fellas. It'll make you sick to your stomach. He hit .403. That was 50 points better than the next highest batting average. His slash line was .403, .513, .645. Yeah.
Those are gross numbers.
Yeah. He hit 3 home runs, 14 walks, and just 8 strikeouts in 62 at-bats. And Torres is 19 years old. So I think we're going to spend a lot of...
Go ahead. Oh, sorry, I was just going to say, and in the Arizona Fall League, you typically can face some really good pitching. It's true. Not like you're facing any terrible stuff.
Like low A. Yeah, I think we're going to spend a lot of years looking back on that trade and wondering if the Cubs could have won the World Series without Chapman or with a different player. But, you know, I don't regret the move yet. The Cubs obviously overpaid for Chapman in the trade. I think that they knew they were overpaying when they pulled the trigger, so to speak. Sorry. But that's what you do when you have a farm system like they have.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I think they're committed to Addison Russell at shortstop. Sorry, I just keep looking at Kurt.
Rolled right off the tongue.
I actually didn't do that on purpose.
Well, I mean, just to jump in and give you a minute, I don't regret the trade, and I never will, given the outcome. Had they lost, maybe then we can second guess it. But there's just no way we can second guess that move. I mean, you had to make some sort of deal, to make yourself better for the stretch run. But that's not to say that he's not going to hurt a little bit. But in order to win a World Series, you probably make a deal that hurts for a while.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that later when we talk about the team needs going forward, things that they'll address this offseason. But I think the Cubs are committed to Addison Russell at shortstop. And I think it's also worth mentioning that those are pretty insane numbers for the Fall League. And those are numbers that he did not put up in the minors. He was the Cubs' top prospect in a very stacked system for a reason. He's really good, but those Fall League numbers are otherworldly. I don't think he's going to come up and hit .403 for his career or anything. So, but I mean, you know, on one hand, it's kind of cool to see, you know, we did pay attention to him obviously when he was in the system. And so you kind of pull for him, similar to, you know, you pull for Starlin Castro when he went to the Yankees. So, I mean, you kind of pull for Torres, but man, it does sting a little bit. And, you know, given that the Cubs right now don't have Chapman, which is fine, but, you know, now you kind of wonder if, I don't know, the 7 years or whatever, 7 years for a couple months was worth it. But I think you're right, Kurt. Right now it is. We'll see.
You have to just consider him cash that you had to spend.
right. Yeah. Okay. So last week we looked at the players on the 2016 Cubs roster that are now free agents this offseason and whether or not they'll be back with the Cubs. We're going to take a few minutes of this episode to address team needs. And some possible solutions or strategy. And here's what's kind of weird to me. I think in years past, we've spent episode after episode talking about what the team needs were and what the team needed to do in the offseason. And I think that most podcasts on specific teams are doing that same thing this year. But the fact of the matter is there's obviously not a lot that needs to be done with this team. They just won the World Series with a very young and cost-controlled roster. Any changes will be tweaks and minor improvements, and the free agent class is really weak this year, and the Cubs just don't have any glaring weaknesses. But I think there are some things that the Cubs could work on a bit, and we'll go through those now. But I think it's interesting that normally in an off season, like that's the big thing that you talk about. What are we going to do in the off season? How are they going to make this team better? And it's just really strange to be in a position where it's like, yeah, we'll kind of mention it in one episode, although there's not a lot there to talk about, even like in a short conversation. So it's just,
well, yeah, and after seeing what you guys had put down as your topics, it was almost a struggle to be the third of the three of us to pick a topic and say,
right, yeah.
So that's a really cool place to be.
Yeah, it's really unique. So I'll kind of start us off. I'll talk about the bullpen. And, you know, last week we talked about Chapman being a free agent. I think the three of us agreed that the Cubs will probably not pursue Chapman. Kenley Jansen is an option. And the Cubs have apparently, according to reports, done their research on Jansen. But it seems like the Cubs just aren't willing to spend big money on a closer. And, yes, the bulk of their roster is cheap. But the Cubs are going to have pretty significant needs here in the next two or three years, especially when it comes to pitching. When you think about either they're going to have to pay a lot to keep Arrieta, or they're going to have to go out and find replacements. And you also have, you know, Lackey. And I mean, they are going to have to spend some money probably. And so it would appear that the Cubs are not going to sign Chapman or Jansen. I think another thing to consider too is that with the weak free agent class, most teams will be willing to overspend. So guys like Melanson and these two will probably draw more than they typically would, and probably more than the Cubs want to spend. I will say though that the closer situation does have me a little bit nervous. There's a lot of time between now and another playoff run, but I don't feel completely comfortable with Hector Rondon in the closer role. And I'm really interested in seeing how he does in 2017, because he did see some improvements like in some of his peripherals, but his home run rate really jumped. And I didn't go back. I was trying to think looking at numbers, like nothing really jumped out to me. I mean, obviously like his fly ball rate was higher. Well, yeah, it's going to be higher if your home run rate is higher. So there were some things that were connected like that, but I didn't dig way deep. But I was sitting here trying to think like, okay, why exactly, you know, would that have happened? And I didn't look into this, but it was an idea that I had, but I didn't look into it. But I think there is something to the argument that closers don't always pitch well in non-closed situations. And I think it'd be worth looking at how many of those home runs were in non-save situations. Because let's be honest, for a large chunks of the season, especially like the first 2 months, the Cubs weren't really in a lot of save situations. And so the home run rate does concern me. And I would say that it's pretty clear by the adding Chapman that the front office didn't have total faith in Rondon as a closer. And I think Madden didn't have full faith in him in the playoffs either, although I'm not convinced he was 100% healthy, and that may have played a role in that too. But I guess I'm kind of talking around the issue here. But the Cubs have until the trade deadline to figure this out as far as a closer goes. If they don't, you know, if they probably don't go out and get any of those top three high price guys. And I really hope that they are able to find some internal solutions. I don't know if Strope is the guy. I think that Carl Edwards Jr. really could be. And, you know, I was thinking that 2017 might be a little bit early to put him in at that role. You know, like I was thinking like, well, do you really like, if the Cubs are in the playoffs again, are they going to trust, you know, a 24-year-old or 25-year-old to go out there and be a shutdown closer? And then I was thinking about it. I was like, well, they did trust him in the 10th inning of game 7 of the World Series this year. And he got, you know, and I think their intention, I think Madden's intention was that Edwards was going to finish that game. And it wasn't until he walked a guy and then, you know, gave up a base hit. And I think they, you know, pulled the plug on him. I don't know. Like
I was just going to jump in and say, I kind of agree with that. I mean, if you trust him to pitch in the playoffs and in the World Series, then certainly he can handle a save situation in June or whatever the case is. That
right.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to be overly flustered by it. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think he could be, he's definitely an option. And then suddenly if you've got, Strope, Rondon, and Edwards, that's a pretty good 1-2-3 to try to close out
right.
three innings.
Yeah. Yeah. I would really like to see that. And I think you're right. I mean, they trusted him in if they trust him in the 10th inning of game 7 of the World Series, then I think you trust him throughout the season. And that gives him the experience that he needs to be able to handle, you know, what the playoffs in 2017, if they get there. I don't know. I guess if like that doesn't work for some reason, I really just hate the idea that we might see the Cubs have to go out and trade more of the farm to get another closer for the second year in a row. And based on what they gave up in Gleyber Torres and how he did in the fall league, that's kind of left that sour taste in my mouth. And, you know, it's probably a taste that's magnified over this small sample size of a fall league, but still. And I don't know. You know, I don't think there's any closers that the Cubs would be able to go get in a trade that would take a player like, you know, a return like Gleyber Torres. But you know, because I mean, in a way, that's a future of the Cubs. You know, that's a future that the Cubs are dealing away. And there's the talent to be able to do that. But it would be really nice to not have to do that. And what do you guys, I mean, Andy, do you have any thoughts on maybe Carl yeah. Edwards Jr. being a closer?
No, I think that's a great option. I don't mind it at all. But there are, you know, some free agent options out there. Greg Holland, for example, used to be a closer for the Royals, I believe, who I think he was out due to injury last season. And so, they could take a chance on him. He's been really, really good in the past. So they'd have to, you know, shell out some money for him. But I don't know what his price tag would be, but it certainly would be a lot lower than some of those, you know, the top tier closers that are out there. Right. So, you know, that's a possibility. I don't see the Cubs, you know, paying a lot of money for a free agent closer by any means, but that's kind of my...
Like a longer deal because closers can be so, you know, good one year, bad the next. So right.
Yeah.
You could sign a guy, you could sign a Chapman to 4 years and maybe all of a sudden 2 years from now, you've got to eat 2 years because he's just not as good. So,
well, and I mean, all it takes is one arm injury, one elbow injury, and he goes from 103 to 97 or, you know, if his velocity starts dropping, like it did towards, you know, game 7 of the World Series, you can see what happens when it hit, his velocity drops a little bit. But as far as the rest of the bullpen goes, I think we will see the Cubs take flyers on some guys just kind of floating around out there. I think we'll see them grabbing guys off waivers and things like that. I think there will probably be some guys from the system that come up. Hey guys, you remember Zach Roskup? Remember that guy? I think we'll probably see him. He was out the entire season after he had arthroscopic surgery. He got injured in spring training, right at the beginning of spring training. And I believe he had surgery in May, so he wasn't able to throw for 3 months. I haven't seen anything about his progress. There's also, Andruri Acevedo. He got injured early in the season and was out for the remainder of the season with an ACL injury. But, you know, you look at the 40-man, and there's a lot of guys in there that could come up and pitch just out of the bullpen. You know, not in the, I'm not talking about closers now, but just general bullpen arms. Jake Buchanan, Aaron Brooks, Leathersick, Felix Pena, David Rollins. You know, Andy, you mentioned Dwayne Underwood Jr. So I think the bullpen is probably in okay shape because they're going to be able to cycle. They like to play... I think Madden likes to you know, play the hot arms or whatever, and I think there's going to be kind of a nice little rotation. And I would imagine, like, some of those guys mentioned, I think we'll see them going back in, you know, between Chicago and Des Moines a few times during the season. So that's the that's my take on the bullpen, I guess.
All right, so I took starting pitching, which, you know, the Cubs opted into this, or opted out, I guess, of a contract to put them in the situation by not keeping Hamill on the team option. So the number five starting spot is a bit up in the air. There are, I guess, a few ways they could go. Of course, they could sign a free agent. I don't think that's likely, because Theo has said himself that they'd like a cost-controlled guy in that number five spot. And if you were going to sign a free agent, then you should have just kept Hamill, because he was pretty good and was a relative bargain with that option. So I don't think that's probably the most likely scenario, especially given this free agent class is pretty weak. So I don't know. I don't see him going that way. I see more of a Montgomery's the front runner with maybe Zastrzyzny, Pierce Johnson kind of competing in spring training for a possibility at that spot, with Montgomery most likely getting it, barring any unforeseen circumstances. Gives you another lefty in the rotation. So, and then, of course, I think they'll probably shore things up with a few of the insurance policies, like we've seen in the past, that they'll give you know, some older guys with some injury troubles a chance at that spot. So,
right.
Give themselves more options and give Bosio a few guys to work with. So, yeah, it's not a huge hole and one that they made for themselves. So,
and not but, one but where they're going to go out and I don't think they're going to go out and get a free agent. Like, you know, somebody's like, oh, that's our number five.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you could have just kept Hamill at that. So,
yeah. Although and we talked about it, but I think it's pretty cool what the Cubs did for Hamill by opting out of that. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I guess what my topic boils down to is, what do the Cubs do now that Fowler is most likely not coming back to the Cubs? I don't really see them paying him a lot, you know, on a free agent, you know, mm-hmm. For, you know, like a 4-year deal or something like that. So so that brings up a couple of problems. Is, first of all, center field. So, you know, presumably they're going to give Albert Almora Jr. more of a chance this season. It's hard to see him as being the everyday center fielder. But I don't really have any problem with him maybe playing the matchups, you know, with Madden playing the matchups. So with Almora facing lefties, and then that then leaves the question of who will be playing center field against righties. And so I think the Cubs certainly could just slide Hayward over to center, and that'll make the outfield more rugged if, you know, there's some combination of Schwarber and Soler, assuming Soler is still there. But their options would be Soler, Zobrist, Schwarber, Hayward, Caesar, and Almora Jr. as far as the outfield goes. So there's some, I don't know, that's a pretty, there's some pretty good combinations in there. They can play matchups with that, you know, with that group. So I think they'll be okay. There's been some talk online, you know, in various Cubs sites and on Twitter and what have you, about the Cubs trying to get a lefty outfielder to be able to platoon with Almora. And boy, it's hard to you look at the options and there's, I don't see a lot there that they can go after, like Sam Fold, you know? So I think it's in-house, but then the problem with that though is they're going to probably have to reconfigure their batting order from last season, because who is your leadoff man? Almora is not really an on-base guy. And you know, he strikes out a lot, doesn't draw a lot of walks. Doesn't hit for an insanely high average or anything like that. So he's probably lower in the order. So what do you do? I mean, you look at the guys who give you the most disciplined at bats, you know, on the Cubs team currently. And I think it would make sense to move Zobrist perhaps to lead off. The Cubs don't run a lot anyway.
Right.
And so His OBP last season was 386, which was pretty high compared to his, you know, a little higher than his career numbers, but obviously gives you a great, or, you know, great plate discipline. And so would work well there, but I liked him protecting Rizzo in the lineup too. So, so I don't know. There's some question marks with who bats leadoff this upcoming season.
Yeah, that's another one of those good problems to have about, you know, if we assume Javi's locked in second for the most part, well, then Zobrist has got to move to the outfield, and then Schwarber's back, and there's kind of a log jam out there. And then, I don't know, I kind of don't see Soler making it through. I don't know, somebody's got to give up at bats a lot or just get moved. And
right.
At this point, it feels like Soler to me. So, yeah, I mean, to try to squeeze in enough at bats for Zobrist, Schwarber, Soler, and then also squeeze in Caesar once in a while, and then Almora as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of bodies out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, Andy, you kind of brought up the leadoff options, and I think we could probably have a, you know, a full discussion on that, but you know, that's one of those things that, as you were saying that, I guess I really hadn't thought too much about that leadoff spot, and I guess, you know, Zobrist is kind of the one that somewhat makes sense. You're right. You know, that's where it's really kind of if Hayward would have had a better season this year, like, he's someone that you could think about, like, oh yeah, he could, you know, he would be a guy that would, you know, I mean, traditionally he's taken pretty disciplined at bats and he's gotten on base, and, you know, for as big as he is, he's fast, you know, so, like, but it's hard to see him in that spot right now. But I really do think
he retools and
right,
eventually yeah. work his way into that spot if he becomes more effective at the plate. But yeah, that's hard to see right now.
Yeah, and I really do think that we'll see some pretty drastic improvements from Hayward. I think we'll see him getting back to his you know, kind of his career average stuff, performances and stuff. Okay, so I feel like we have to talk about this. Number one, because we did get an email from Michael. I'm going to go ahead and read this, but I kind of figured we would need to talk about it anyway. So this is from Michael in Galesburg. He says, I'm writing this in regards to Steve Bartman. This is a subject where it feels as though the Ricketts family wants to revisit and reach out to the man himself. Questions. Number one, have the Ricketts family and the Cubs done their best to help us forget about 2003? I believe they have, and so he answers this. He says, I believe they have far exceeded anyone's expectations. He said, do the Cubs fans need to forgive Bartman and move on? He said, I think we should do our best just to forget it. Okay, it seems the clickbait articles have no more curse, so this is where they, so this is what they put out there. He said, should Bartman ever forgive Cubs fans? And he said, it feels like everything is, everything in the news, it is, oh, we forgive you now, Steve. You can now come out of hiding. You're forgiven. And Michael says, we should not be forgiving him. We should not be forgiving him. He should be forgiving us. And then he says, have we as Cubs fans earned the right to be forgiven by Bartman? And he said, after the 30 for 30, I don't think any of us deserve to have this off our conscience. On the ESPN doc, they showed a lot of scumbag fans that wanted to have Steve exposed, show his face, his address. And if this is ever put to rest, it is because Steve is a noble and generous man, not because we won the World Series. He says, thank you for your time, Michael, the handholder from Galesburg. So, yeah, apparently there's like there was a news article. I avoid all this kind of stuff. It just doesn't really interest me. And so I guess earlier in the week was Ricketts said something, apparently. I didn't even read the article. But I think Ricketts said something.
I think it was in response to a question, though. Like, I didn't get the impression that it was Ricketts saying, like, hey, guys, okay, now it's time to address this.
Right.
It was somebody asked him, because, of course, fans are asking about it. And then I think someone asked him about it. And he said, oh, well, maybe we'll reach out at the appropriate time or in some way.
Yeah, I think
so. I felt like it was an organic situation that he responded to, not something that he or the, you know, the ownership thought they needed to do. And bring up on their own.
Yeah. And which is kind of weird. I think like Ricketts a lot of times is pretty slick when it comes to PR. I think he has the right answers a lot of times. He's pretty measured in what he says. And that kind of surprises me that he would say that, because I think, you know, they've probably had their talking point all along, you know, and because I know that they've been faced with this question before, and this answer seems a little different. And that kind of surprises me that, like, okay, yeah, we will reach out to him. And I personally, I think Michael raises a good point. Like, why is this an issue now? Because the Cubs won. It's like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, it's weird. Like, I don't know. I pretty much agree with everything that Michael said. I think that it's not us that need to forgive Bartman. Just let him have his peace. That's obviously what he wants. And if he wants to come out, then let him come out. And if he doesn't, like, I just don't understand. Like, I was kind of hoping that, like, once the Cubs won the World Series, like, people would stop talking about it finally. Like, that would be the event that finally, you know, took that story out of the Cubs history timeline or whatever. And so it's kind of, I think it's unfortunate that it's still being talked about.
Do you think, though, like, maybe, so he mentioned scumbag Cubs fans that wanted to have Steve exposed and stuff like that. Wouldn't it be good for the Cubs to maybe just have him or ask him, invite him if he wants to come and throw out a first pitch and just say, see, we're, you know, all, you know, if he is forgiven Cubs fans, yeah, then you dummies can go ahead and move on, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's like, I kind of imagine that the Cubs have given that opportunity to him in the past. You know, I would imagine that they have reached out to him and, but I don't know. Yeah. I think like here's my opinion, like his life has, you know, I'm not going to say it's been ruined, but it's obviously not, like, this is not the idea. This is probably not the way he envisioned things playing out, you know, when he planned for his future. And so I just think, like, whatever the guy wants, you do for him. And I guess if he wants to come throw out a first pitch, then you do it. But it is weird that, like, it's because the Cubs won the World Series. Now everybody feels like it's okay. And the same thing happened with the Red Sox, with Buckner. And he, you know, it was after they won the World Series that they invited him back to Boston and he got to go on the field and throw the first pitch and everything. So it's just weird that, like, you know, you have these weird superstitious things that I don't know.
Yeah, it is. It's so weird that it's even still a story that we should have moved on before. But obviously, though, with, you know, things like ESPN and crazy
right.
people,
right?
These things don't die. I mean, ESPN does a 30 for 30, and that's out there, and we can't make that go away. So, I mean, at the same time, like, I don't like being lumped with the meatheads who, mm-hmm. you know, wanted to, like, go after him, but I agree with what you're saying. Just, like, leave the man alone if he wants to reach out. But I think also the Ricketts, like, I'm guessing that this was pretty innocent on his part, and he was thinking, like, maybe privately we'll reach out and we'll just talk,
sure,
and not make a big spectacle about it. And the way, again, I haven't looked at it or read it or anything, but maybe it was just sort of blown out from there that, oh, Ricketts is going to reach out to him, and he just meant that they would email, you know, who knows what he meant. So yeah, I hope this is kind of the last big story about this. Well, maybe Steven is hiding and listens to the IVMV podcast to keep up with the Cubs, because he was a huge Cubs fan, and I assume he probably still is.
Yeah,
so let's let it go.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, so that does it for this episode. It was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. We have one new Patreon supporter this week. It's Jeff from Decatur, Illinois. Thank you, Jeff. And if you enjoy this podcast and you want to help us keep things expanding, you can support the podcast by for as little as $1 a month. It's hopefully just pocket change for you, and it helps us out tremendously. There's perks at every level, and here in the next few weeks, I'll be sending out another round of Patreon perks, including the IVMV pint glasses. I'm behind on those, so I will get those all sent out to everybody that's eligible for those. And if you would like to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. So we will be back next Sunday evening to talk about whatever happens with the Cubs between now and then. Thank you for listening. And until next Sunday, go Cubs.